Welcome to my dojo. This is Kung Fu Pizza Party, and I'm your host, Brandon Knight. And today, I am here to review The Clones of Bruce Lee. Yes, you heard that correctly. The Clones of Bruce Lee. For those of you joining us for the very first time, first off, welcome. If you are joining us for the first time, it is important that you know that here on Kung Fu Pizza Party, I seek to deliver high-flying action in 30 minutes or less and serve up some wisdom one slice at a time. But whenever I do not serve up, anytime I do not deliver an episode in 30 minutes or less, I have to take on a challenge to repay my debt and restore my honor. And that is why, good listeners, this is actually the second episode that came out today. Yes, if you go back, just scroll down or up, depending on the order you keep your podcast. There was another episode that came out today, me reviewing the book, The Art of Peace. I encourage you to go listen to that episode because that reflection on that book will benefit you in your life journey. As opposed to the review of this movie will contribute nothing positive to your life. And it's not necessarily because of the movie, but because of the genre that I'm going to be covering here today. But this is the fulfilling the double episode drop challenge that was given to me. Again, if you've been following the show here for a minute, you have probably noticed that this is quite the shift away from what I have been covering here on the show, which as of recent has predominantly been Karate Kid related content in the build up to Karate Kid Legends. So to come here today to review The Clones of Bruce Lee definitely is a sharp change from what's been going on around here. And that was intentional. When I sat down to watch a movie this past week, I guess just because I have been watching so much Karate Kid lately, I really wanted just something different, something completely other than what Karate Kid is. Plus, with Karate Kid Legends fully in our rearview mirror now, and it is time now for me to start looking forward to the next big martial art movie of the year, that being Mortal Kombat 2. And I have ideas for how I want to build to that. There are other challenges that I need to fulfill still, specifically reviews for here on the show. Along with that, there are people that I've began and I need to, or want to rather, pitch episode ideas to. I've had several people pitch multiple episode ideas to me, which is exciting. It reminds me of one of the reasons why I started this show in the first place is because there aren't a lot of martial art media shows out there. So to have, you know, people coming forward and saying, hey, can I come talk about this movie or this story arc in this anime or all these ideas? Like, it's very exciting, but it's also a little bit overwhelming, a little bit at times, like, oh man, there's so much I want to do, people pitching ideas, there's just so much to do. And there may be, I don't want to be overwhelmed over this because this is a for fun project, this is a for fun show, you know, but there may come some times in the near future where there may be multiple episodes a week. I don't want to promise that, I'm not making the promise that the show is going to 2 days a week, but there may be the occasion where there will be multiple episodes, two episodes a week, probably like a Tuesday, Friday release schedule then, because there's just so much that I would like to get done before the end of the year. So I don't want to guarantee anything towards that, but that might be something that's coming up. Because there's a lot. And so, again, when I sat down to watch something completely, I really was just looking for something completely different. And at just like a true palate cleanser, kind of this, you know, we're putting Karate Kid behind us for the time being. And before we start jumping into all the other possible ways that this show could go over the next few months as I begin building to Mortal Kombat 2, I was like, let's just do something completely different. I just want something other to watch. And there is nothing quite like sitting down to watch a movie that is a part of the wacky and wild subgenre that was Bruceploitation. So let's go back to the year 1973. A little bit of a martial art. We haven't done this in a while. A martial art cinema history lesson. So let's go back to the year 1973 where, and this is a true statement, Bruce Lee is dead. Bruce Lee has died. And many film studios, particularly in Hong Kong, Taiwan, and South Korea, started making movies to capitalize off of Bruce Lee's death. These films included plots that either had vague connections and similar plots to Bruce Lee films, or actually used the death of Bruce Lee as a plot point in the film, at times even using actual footage from his actual funeral in the film. Here in this in today's review for The Clones of Bruce Lee, this movie opens with Bruce Lee dead, being rushed to a hospital to try and, you know, save his life. Not only that, these films also frequently either included a direct reference to Bruce Lee in the title, again, like The Clones of Bruce Lee, or was kind of an amalgamation of titles from other Bruce Lee movies. I think my favorite one, just by title alone, is Enter the Game of Death, which is a smash-up of Enter the Dragon and Game of Death. All they needed was to add Of Fury, the Enter the Game of Death of Fury, and you could have had three Bruce Lee movies squished together in one title. So not only were the plot and the titles of the movies these references, the studios would also go seek out actors that had obviously a martial art background, but were, you know, maybe they had a similar build or kind of looked like Bruce Lee in the face or had a similar haircut, and would give them stage names that again were subtle references, not so subtle references to Bruce Lee. The Clones of Bruce Lee actually features two of the most popular of the what was come to be known as Lee-alikes, two of the most famous Lee-alikes, Dragon Lee and Bruce Lee, that is Bruce L.E. Lee. And for the remainder of this review, I will be referring to that one as Lay Bruce, because I don't want your ears to be tricked or have to spell L.E. over and over again. So we have Dragon Lee and Lay Bruce in this movie. And to kind of cap everything off here, not only with the plots and the titles and the actors and the name, the stage names, all of this combined, one thing that was often overlooked, it is very common that these studios would cast people who were not from Hong Kong. Bruce Lee's parents were from Hong Kong. They're Hong Kongers. You do not call someone from Hong Kong Chinese. They're Hong Kongers. Bruce was born in America, but his parents were from Hong Kong. And the majority of these Lee-alike actors were not from Hong Kong. Dragon Lee was South Korean. He studied Taekwondo and Hapkido. Lay Bruce was from what was formerly known as Burma and was a martial artist and gymnast. All that is to say that by way of at least martial art training background, I actually have more in common with Dragon Lee and Lay Bruce than those two have with Bruce Lee. And if you're sitting there thinking to yourself, boy, this all sounds incredibly tacky, trust me, it is. Like, I'm not defending any of this at all. Just imagine the darkest timeline where after Paul Walker's death, someone in Hollywood shoots the idea of making a movie called Furious and Fast, starring a Canadian who they give the stage name Walker Paul, and show some of Paul Walker's actual funeral in the movie. That will go over like a lead balloon. Or imagine the world where we have Brokeback Mountain 2, where Heath Ledger dies, but his almost identical cousin, Heath Joker, is in the film. Like, this is all incredibly tacky. And it was kind of known to be incredibly tacky at the time as well, even though there are a ton of these movies. It's one of those things where it's kind of hard to tell, like, was it demand or was it just being pumped out? Because there are, I don't know, hundreds? Maybe hundreds, this might be an exaggeration, but like this spanned for 10 years. There's about 10 years worth of movies that came out during this time period. And these movies were pretty cheap to make, so studios were pumping these out left and right with multiple actors. There are far more Lee-alikes than Dragon Lee and Leigh Bruce, to the point where even there during the midst of all of this, this trend, this subgenre, Sammo Hung made a movie called Enter the Fat Dragon, which was a parody poking fun at this subgenre while these movies are coming out. And like I said at the beginning, Hong Kong, studios in Hong Kong, Taiwan, and South Korea were kind of on the forefront of putting these movies out. But our hands weren't clean in this either. Near the end of this era of films, many people consider Berry Gordy's The Last Dragon to be a Bruceploitation film, because there is a big difference between trying to capitalize off of the real life death of somebody versus paying like an appropriate homage to somebody who has made an impact. Uma Thurman wearing the yellow and black jumpsuit in the Kill Bill films is not exploitive. That is an homage to Bruce Lee. There's other places as well. There is actually, and I'm sorry to be bringing this up during Pride Month, there's actually a movie called Bruce Lee versus Gay Power. It's from Portugal, and the guy playing Bruce Lee is Portuguese. Like, everybody got in on this some way, somehow. And like I said, this lasted for, this subgenre went on for like 10 years or so. And the thing that eventually brought it to the end, it wasn't a thing, it was a person, and that was Jackie Chan. Jackie Chan, by the early 80s, is firmly established now as the king of kung fu. He is the new king of kung fu. He has already made Snake in the Eagle's Shadow, Drunken Master, Fearless Hyena. He started doing films in Hollywood during the early 80s is when we're getting films like Project A, Police Story, My Lucky Stars. Like Jackie Chan is really like starting to stand out as the new king of kung fu, which is of course all ironic because he also was one of the Lee-alikes. Hands down, the one who was the most famous out of this era of actors. It was kind of different, though, how Jackie Chan was treated as opposed to Dragon Lee or Leigh Bruce or countless other Lee-alikes, where there was kind of this, like, intentional campiness of like, yeah, we know it's not Bruce Lee, but we're just gonna try our best. In the early days of Jackie Chan's career, moving from stunt work to being leading man, it was more like, this is gonna be a specific reference for the wrestling fans out there, it was more like when WWE started pushing Roman Reigns as the new guy. But it was more so treated as, okay, here you go. Here's your new face of the company. There you go. There he is. Just believe us. That's the, and it, Roman Reigns never got over that way. And it wasn't until he turned heel, did the Bloodline storyline, that he finally got over. He became his own person, his own character, his own storyline, rather than being shoehorned into the main event. Similarly, here with Jackie Chan during the early days of his leading man career, basically studios was like, okay, here you go. Here's the next guy. Just believe us. this is the next guy. And Jackie Chan was put in a lot of serious films. He was in Fist of Fury 2, which is supposed to be the kind of sequel to the Bruce Lee film. Like, they tried to put him over as this serious counterpart to Bruce Lee, when in reality, he didn't get over until he stepped out of that shadow, became his own person, and started doing comedy. Comedic action kung fu films, that is. So that is what eventually brought this genre to an end, was the fact that, you know, kind of this, like, we're wandering the wilderness hoping to find somebody to be the next big guy. And eventually, Jackie Chan emerged. Now, you're probably checking your phone and realizing you've been going for 15 minutes and really haven't said much about the movie. This has all been very interesting, Brandon, about this incredibly tacky subgenre. But, like, what's up with this movie? Here's the thing about this movie. Truth be told, there's really not much to say here. There's not really too much to this movie, which is why I went ahead and spent most of this episode to talk about Bruceploitation films. But like I said, this movie opens with Bruce Lee dead. He is dead, being rushed to a hospital to try and, you know, save his life, but the doctors cannot save him. And so, as it always is, when a prominent actor passes away, a secret government official shows up to tell the doctors that he would like a sample of Bruce Lee's DNA so he could take it to his friend who has a very complicated cloning process. You know, like how it works in the real world. Now, one thing that is a bit of a big deal about the clones of Bruce Lee, which I know is probably like a weird thing to think about with this movie, that there's actually something exciting about this film, is that this movie came out in 1980. So we're nearing the end of this era. And basically, this movie was the Ocean's 11, Christopher Nolan kind of movie, where it's a pretty small cast, but it's like this ensemble cast of prominent actors who played a lot of roles in these Bruceploitation films. Like I said, Dragon Lee and Lay Bruce are in this movie. The doctor who is like got the cloning instruments, that's John T. Benn, who was the mob boss in Way of the Dragon, and actually later on, decades later, he also has a role in Jet Li's Fearless. So he goes, and there's a few others as well I'll highlight here in a moment, but he takes this DNA sample from Bruce Lee and makes three clones. Why three? I don't know. Because they had enough material to make three, I guess. Dragon Lee plays Bruce Lee 1, Lay Bruce plays Bruce Lee 2, and then there's another Lee-alike who is Bruce Lee 3, and I'm not making that up, that is their actual characters' names. Bruce Lee 1, Bruce Lee 2, and Bruce Lee 3. And again, because, you know, as it always is with secret government plots and shady, not, I guess it's not shady, but secret government organizations, these three Bruce Lee clones are then used by the government to fight evil in Southeastern Asia. That is basically the plot of this movie. From that point forward, once they are cloned, they are fighting crime, taking down smugglers and all the, you know, yeah, people running crooked organizations, just using martial arts and espionage to bring down crime syndicates in Southeastern Asia. Here's the thing. I want you to hear me out on this next point. Don't mishear me, but hear me out on this next point. If you take away the Bruce Lee part, it's still kind of a dumb plot, but it's kind of comic booky in a way. Some legendary martial art warrior dies and we find a way to clone him, and we then use the clone or several clones to then fight crime. Sure. Why not? It sounds like an Image Comics book. Like, let's just roll with it. It's the fact that it has to be coupled, unfortunately, with this, you know, real life tragedy of Bruce Lee's death. Also, it's worth pointing out, they clone Bruce Lee 3 times, and never once does it cross anybody's mind to, you know, send one of them to Linda, Shannon, and Brandon, so that way they can have a husband and father back. No, that was never, you know, something that was to be considered whatsoever. There's just 3 secret clones of Bruce Lee running around fighting crime now, and Linda is just going to be a widow, and Brandon and Shannon are just going to grow up without a dad. You know, it's fine. Don't think about it too long. It's not sad. Now, like I said, it's very, the plot itself, as tacky as it is very comic booky, but naturally there's also like a bazillion plot holes in this, to the fact that everybody, I shouldn't say everybody, but the 3 clones of Bruce Lee are just so chill with the fact that they are indeed clones of Bruce Lee. If this movie was made nowadays, it would be 3 hours longer, with like a whole hour devoted to the ethical and existential ramifications of clones who are, you know, also a philosophical martial art hero. Also, for no apparent reason whatsoever, Dragon Lee's character, Bruce Lee 1, is able to like be thrown into the field immediately, but Lei Bruce and Bruce Lee 3, they have to get training in martial arts for some reason. If it was explained, I was not paying attention enough to I'm just going to be honest, I wasn't really paying attention enough to know why. It's just like Dragon Lee shows up and they send him out immediately, but the other two, they need training. And I guess I shouldn't be mad that they needed training, because we do get 2 more great cameos at this point. One of them being the fact Zhang Dao is in this movie, who was an actor in a lot of not only Bruceploitation films, but just a lot of 70s and through to the 80s kung fu movies. In a lot of them, he has a whole kung fu sequence with Bruce Lee 2 and 3, and it's really cool to watch. If you're in it for the, if you're turning it on for the action, it's worth the watch. But it is worth pointing out that they're doing like very stereotypical, traditional looking kung fu that by that point in his life, actual Bruce Lee would not have wasted his time doing. There's nothing about what they are training in. It's too flashy by that point for Bruce Lee. Bruce Lee was so like had deconstructed his fighting style so much by this point that like all the fancy poses and footwork, Bruce isn't doing any of that. The other great cameo that we get is also someone else who was training them, Bolo Young. Bolo Young was in Enter the Dragon, and again through the 70s and 80s was in several kung fu movies, several Bruceploitation films, and I absolutely loved when Bolo Young shows up on screen, because the scene opens and it's his back. They're showing him from the back, and I immediately was like, that's Bolo Young, because you cannot, he has the most like distinguishable back, because Bolo is always ripped, tan, and oiled up. Like he's like a professional wrestler or something. He's ripped, tan, and oiled up. And so right from the back, I was like, yeah, there's Bolo. This is great. And he does fight the two of them in the sequence as well. I caught the movie on YouTube, by the way, and I will drop a link for that in the description of this episode if you'd like to check it out. I will let you all know, there is a scene when they are at a beach, and naturally it's the 70s, so all the women at this beach are butt naked, because, you know, it's the 70s and we just let women run around naked. The thing is, though, the version that I clicked play on YouTube actually censored this part. I don't know if it was required by YouTube or what. And the censoring is hilarious. It's like these giant black boxes over the sensitive area. And there's so many women that it's like half the screen is just blacked out in certain shots. It's like there's nothing to see in this scene now. Overall, though, I would say, would I watch this movie again? Probably not, if I'm being honest. And would I buy a copy of it? Also, probably no. I'm probably not going to go. I will say, though, because of how widespread, how many of these movies that were made, and genuinely, even though they're trying to be Bruce Lee, Dragon Lee and Lei Bruce, especially Dragon Lee, I would say, are really good martial artists. I liked watching them in action. It's sad that they got typecast into this very specific role in a very niche genre, but I'm willing to watch more of these. I probably will, because truth be told, there are wilder plots out there. Bruce Lee fights back from the dead. You could be tripping on acid and that movie would still not make any sense. So there will be more Bruceploitation films to come here on the show, but I don't know if I would actually, one of these would have to be like genuinely good versus just a money grab, because that's basically what these were. They're grabbing at money, trying to not necessarily fill the void of Bruce Lee, but like, you know, just trying to capitalize off of him. It's terrible. It's all terrible. And with that, thanks for listening to today's episode. If you haven't yet already, please rate and review the show wherever you get your podcasts. Follow the show on Instagram at Kung Fu Pizza Party and on Letterboxd, Kung Fu Pizza PRTY, where you can get a short review of the movie before the episode comes out. You can also check out my YouTube channel, Studio 219, a place for faith and pop culture, and check out the other great shows here on the Anazao Ministries Podcast Network, including Systematic Geekology, Why I Don't Like, and of course my sister show, My Seminary Life, which is a little bit more theological teaching stuff. But thanks again for listening to this episode. This has been Kung Fu Pizza Party, where I have delivered high-flying action in 30 minutes or less, because it would be super embarrassing if I fulfilled the challenge by going over on time, and served up some wisdom one slice at a time.